year. It's the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. First time on the podcast, I think the newest writer at Waiting for Next Year. First full-time female contributor, Jessica Forrester. How's it going?
Hi, it's going great.
How's it feel to join the boys club?
You know what? It feels good. It's been great so far. I've been having a blast and everyone's been super helpful and nice. I feel like I'm a part of the boys club, I guess.
We get a little vulgar maybe with the F-bombs and stuff, but it was never like a real intimidating place for a female who could, you know, deal with some swearing.
Right. Absolutely. And I'm not one that offends easily, so F-bombs are not a problem.
Yeah. I figure all writers, you know, regardless of sex, deal with that kind of, and the gallows humor of being a writer or a content creator is like F-bombs and,
right,
and the kind of swearing that you can't do on the front page.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
So we're kind of recording this one in the dark. It's not going to be posted until much later because we are under a moratorium of sorts.
Super secret.
So you got to see the Amy Schumer train wreck movie ahead of time.
I did. I saw it a couple weeks ago.
And so what, first of all, I don't want you to like lose any kind of special privilege, but tell everybody how you came to be able to see this movie. Like, I guess that would be like 5 weeks before it actually was released.
Yeah. So my roommate Krista works for a company that does promotions for movies in and around Cleveland, and they host screenings like that all the time. She, you know, from time to time, I'll join her at those screenings just if it's a movie we really both really want to see. And you know, Trainwreck was coming. She asked if I wanted to go. Obviously, I jumped at the chance. It was amazing. It was a packed house, and people were so excited to be there and to see it. It was really cool.
So how much of that excitement was because LeBron James is in the movie, and how much is just like Amy Schumer excitement?
You know, I think it was about 50-50.
And I think I just insulted Bill Hader, but anyway.
It, you know, the first time that LeBron was on screen, everyone in the audience, you kind of heard this like gasp of excitement, and there was definitely that kind of energy in the theater. You could feel it, like everyone was thinking, oh my god, there he is. And you know, there were a couple times he mentioned Cleveland, he mentioned Akron, people were cheering at those parts, like people were really into it. So I think that he was a big part of the draw, but obviously Amy Schumer, like everyone loves her right now, and I definitely think that was a big part of it too.
Well, not everybody, but we'll get to that later.
Yeah,
I've heard LeBron's part is like way bigger than anybody might imagine. It's bigger than your average cameo.
Yeah, you know, I went into the movie expecting him, like you said, to have a cameo or have, you know, kind of a smaller part, but he is really a supporting character. He's kind of sprinkled throughout the whole movie. He's basically Bill Hader's best friend. So almost every scene that Bill Hader is in, if Amy's not in it, LeBron is in it with him.
Man, it's so crazy to me because you wonder how that came about. I mean, Judd Apatow's involved, Bill Hader, Amy Schumer. Whose idea was it for LeBron to be there? And at what point did LeBron prove himself to be like not an anchor weighing the production down, and they were like, yeah, more LeBron. We need more LeBron.
Right. I wish I knew the answer to that, how he became involved. I know, you know, he has hosted SNL a couple times, I think. And I think he always does pretty well on that. He has like great comedic timing and he kind of gets it. So maybe that's where the idea came from.
Wouldn't it be hysterical if they made him try out?
Yeah. I mean,
you know, LeBron, we're going to need you to come back and read again.
Yeah, like just over and over again, like reading the same lines. I would love to see that if that happened.
So overall, and you know, we might get into some spoilers because you can't spoil a comedy because it's not like you're going to deliver the lines, and it's right. Not like, I'm assuming Amy Schumer doesn't die at the end. So there are no spoilers in a comedy. We're going to delve into all of it.
Okay.
Just fair warning to the listeners out there. So overall, I mean, and is it a typical romantic comedy? Is it raunchy like an Apatow? What do we got going?
You know, honestly, I kind of went into it expecting a typical rom-com, which I love, by the way. I'm a chick flick fanatic, but it is
I'm actually a fan of the rom-com as well. One
Are
of my
you?
Favorite
oh, good.
Movies is Untamed Heart. Take
I've never
that.
I've never seen that.
You can't get much better than Marissa Tomei and Christian Slater for rom-coms.
I'll have to check that one out.
See, I think that was a really nice and graceful way of you saying, Craig, you're old.
No, I don't even, I've never heard of that, Craig, so you must be really old. but back to Trainwreck, it is a rom-com and it definitely is raunchy. I mean, it's Judd and it's Amy Schumer, so it's going to have that kind of humor, but there are a couple more serious storylines kind of woven throughout, a couple like really deep emotional moments that had me tearing up a little bit that I did not expect at all and like totally just surprised me, but they really work for like the overall plot of the movie. They're like, I don't want to give anything away, but it'll take you by surprise, but in a really good way, I think.
And so, in terms of Judd Apatow and his career, I mean, where does this kind of fit in? Does it feel like an Apatow movie or does it feel like an Amy Schumer project?
I think it feels like an Amy Schumer project. It is just genuinely her through and through. And she honestly like shines in it. I think it feels more like her to me.
Okay. So how weird is it after seeing the movie and you've seen it and most people haven't, but how weird is it to see kind of the cultural backlash or the little people trying to pick Amy apart even before the movie comes out? Does it feel like they're trying to spoil it or that people aren't getting a chance to fall in love with her via the movie and maybe her full-on defenders don't even exist yet in the common culture? I mean, as big as Amy Schumer is, she's not, hey, I had a hit summer movie big yet.
Right. I feel like she's still a bit of a dark horse. I think that this movie is going to like catapult her even, you know, bigger. I do think that, you know, there are probably people trying to capitalize on the fact that she has this huge movie coming out. I feel like this week, the promos and the advertising for this movie have really taken off. It's everywhere. And I think that people, you know, they're looking back through the archives, they're seeing things that she said 2 or 3 years ago, and they're trying to put the spotlight back on that and bring it to the forefront just to capitalize on the fact that she's everywhere right now.
Well, and it's not new. We saw the same thing happen with Trevor Noah when they announced him to take over the Daily Show for Jon Stewart.
Right.
What do you make of it? I've never talked to you about entertainment or comedy, so I don't really even know, you know, kind of your baselines or where you come from or what you like and don't like, but I'm interested in everybody's perspective on this because it seems so unfair to grab something from the archives years ago and pick out that one thing, you know, because it was presumably, I think what they were talking about was part of a 45 or an hour long set, 45 minute or an hour long set. And then you pick apart like the one thing,
right?
And it loses all of its context.
Right. You know, I think you're right. I think it's unfair. I try to imagine myself if, you know, the national media outlets picked up something stupid I tweeted 2 years ago that I, you know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
You're so far removed from that 2 years later. Does she even remember saying that? And I obviously, you know, she said some things that were controversial and it's unfortunate, but I agree with you that I think it's unfair that it's being so much attention is being put on it now, 2 years later.
Well, and it's, you know, we all want to partake in the modern world where change happens at an ever a more rapid pace than ever before. And then at the same time, we want to go back and look 4 years ago and pretend like something that was said in 2010 or 2011 has the same exact context in 2015 when things have drastically changed in that amount of time and language has changed and cultural norms have changed, at least in certain segments of society. It just, it's always so weird to me. And I don't want to drag us into the entire Confederate flag thing,
right?
But I will say that if you apply your opinions on the Confederate flag to the General Lee in that stupid TV show from the 70s, right, you're missing the mark. There were no political statements with Bo and Luke Duke.
Right. No, I totally agree. And, you know, cultural perceptions change and evolve just like anything else. And it's, you know, things change and opinions change. Just like you said, something from the 70s, like the Dukes of Hazzard Car is not. And I think when you're thinking about everything like that, you have to take intent into consideration. You know, was there malintent behind anything, or was it just meant to be harmless?
Well, and that's something that's tough for people, because I think it should be simple to look at Amy Schumer and say, oh yeah, she is on the side of fairness and rights and everything else. She's not. I don't understand how you look at her and the bulk of her career and decide, yeah, you know what? She is a bigot, or right, she is a racist. I don't know. I think that we've taken these data points, these statements that are like these data points, and we've pretended like that they're not part of a greater statistical subset or something.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Things get isolated and then they get kind of blown up, and on the internet, things take off like wildfire, and then all context gets removed, and before you know it, it's everywhere, and maybe it's not entirely accurate.
So do you think it's all going to kind of go by the wayside? Do you think this movie's good enough that she's just going to be America's darling, or is it going to get worse?
You know, I would hope that it just kind of blows over. I mean, 2 days ago, everyone was talking about Paula Deen in blackface, and now no one's talking about that today. Like, these things have like a 24-hour cycle.
One happened so fast. I didn't even notice that one.
The Paula Deen thing, she dressed up, her and her son dressed up as Lucy and Ricky for Halloween, and her son had makeup on to make himself look Hispanic, and they posted it as like a throwback Thursday or something. It must have been last Thursday. Someone posted it to social media from her account as a throwback Thursday, and for like a day or two, it was all anyone was talking about.
I want to search Twitter for the words Paula Deen and there was one word that I was trying to think of, tone deaf. If I never hear somebody called tone deaf again, it'll be too soon. I'm sure I'm guilty, but the world, our culture has worn it out.
Yeah, I agree.
So now I'm searching for it.
You need to find it.
Oh man. How many tweets? Oh, it's not going to tell me. Anyway. Is this the kind of thing, are you going to see it again? Or do you ever see movies again?
I don't ever go to the theater more than once to see a movie. I hardly ever go to the theater in the first place. Uh-huh. This is one that I would buy.
No, look at this picture's not that bad. What were they yelling about?
I don't disagree with you. I'm just saying that was thing like 2 days ago.
I just not only did we record this at the point where this was already dead.
Yeah.
But now I'm reacting to something that's even deader because we isolated this podcast till later.
That's true. By the time that this goes out, who knows what everyone will be talking about.
Hopefully not either one of us.
Yeah, right. I would definitely want to see this again. I would buy it on DVD or get it on demand or Netflix. I would definitely watch it again. I really loved it.
Oh, that's great to hear, because I'm an Amy Schumer fan because she's been going on the Opie and Anthony show for years and years now. She's friends with Jim Norton and all those comedians, and like Colin Quinn and Jim Norton, and she was good friends with Patrice O'Neill and all the, I love that whole crew of comedians. Are you big into comedy, or how did you come to find Amy Schumer?
And just a side note, Colin Quinn is actually in Trainwreck. I don't know if you know that.
I did know that, yeah.
He's amazing as her father. You know, I love stand-up comedy. I love watching the comedy specials or seeing them when they come here to Cleveland. I was a big Patrice O'Neill fan. I love Aziz Ansari. I love.
I always pull my head to the side a little bit when a female says they're a big fan of Patrice O'Neill too.
Really?
No. Like I'm like kind of impressed by it.
Oh, good. I honestly kind of found him by way of The Office, which okay. is a weird way to get to him. But he had like a small role, and then I realized that he was a stand-up comedian. And I think he's really, really funny. I guess the gateway for me was Mitch Hedberg.
Yeah.
I was obsessed with him, and that kind of got me into comedy.
And so then Amy Schumer kind of came out of all that?
Amy Schumer came out of all that, and she's the kind of comedian I feel like she, from a female perspective, she says stuff, and I'm like, oh, yeah, that's exactly how I feel about that, or like she takes the thoughts right out of your head, even if you don't know you had them until you hear them. Like she's so relatable.
Well, and that's part of it too. She doesn't come off like she is just making it up. She comes off as experienced or kind of hardened, like she's been through it.
Right. And that's exactly the part she plays in this movie too.
Because you can usually see through somebody who is playing a role or pretending that they've been through something that they haven't, and mm-hmm. there's like a weird stench to it. I think people just start to smell it.
Yeah, and I think that's part of what I loved about this movie so much. I feel like she's playing herself in so many ways, and it's just really genuine. So it's just really, really fun to watch.
So do you think we're kind of seeing the end of stand-up comedy the way it's been? I mean, you've got guys like Seinfeld saying he won't play colleges anymore, and Chris Rock says the same thing, and it seems like we have a gotcha culture, which couldn't be a bigger enemy for any kind of art form than it is for stand-up comedy.
Right. You know, I don't know, because I look at, you know, 2 or 3 weeks ago, I was able to go to one of the Kevin Hart shows here in Cleveland, and he sold out the queue twice in one night.
Right.
And that just, I mean, that's so many people all coming downtown to see a stand-up comedy show on a Sunday night. So I feel like there's still an audience for that. I feel like people still just love to be entertained, and going to see a stand-up comic is just a totally different kind of thing to do.
Yeah. Well, and Cleveland's got a really nice if you have the local music, local band scene, Cleveland has a really great local comedian scene. Chad Zumach is a semi-frequent guest on this podcast. And, you know, I've been friends with some of the other comedians in the area. And it seems like I have one friend every 6 months who says they're going to go try stand-up comedy. And they're usually kind of good at it. So,
yeah, that's awesome. If you could see any stand-up comedian like tonight, who would you pick?
If I could see anyone, you know, I would repeat. My wife and I saw Bill Burr at Pickwick and Frolic probably 7-8 years ago. And I'm still just a gigantic Bill Burr fan, so I would just pick Bill.
Yeah.
But I want to see him again in the small club. I don't want to go to a big theater to see him.
Oh, yeah.
Because that was just the best. I mean, his material from back then is kind of dated. He was talking about the Container Store and Tupperware and stuff.
he might have to update that if he was going to do a show now.
He's just so funny no matter what he talks about. And I loved the fact that whenever I was watching Breaking Bad, he would sneak in there. And, you know, he had a pretty big part, or actually a small part that grew and grew and grew. And he was one of those guys you could find yourself just kind of rooting for, who rose to a level of fame well beyond stand-up comedy. And that's kind of the same way I feel about Amy Schumer right now, too.
Yeah, no, I totally agree.
It's so much fun. There's inevitably some backlash of those bands when they get too big. But I don't really feel that way with stand-ups most of the time. I'm still fascinated by the whole Dane Cook thing. His career arc and everything that's ever gone on with him fascinates me, because I never went full on hate for Dane Cook the way other people did.
Yeah, I agree.
But it seems like Kevin Hart's pretty. I kind of hate Kevin Hart a little bit.
You know, I got free tickets to that show. They were given to me by a friend, and I wouldn't have paid for them. But he was actually. I don't have any bad feelings about him. I just wasn't. You know, I don't know. It was like, yeah, sure, I'll go. He was actually pretty good. He's
a great stand-up. My exposure to him was that stupid celebrity thing at the NBA All-Star Game. And it's like he's done the same bit where he's going to win the MVP award like 4 or 5 years running. And it's like, we get it.
Yeah.
We get it. You're the crazy guy who's way too intense for the celebrity game, and you're going to win the MVP. We got it. And you're 5'2".
Yeah, he is tiny and intense.
Yeah. So did he just crush the queue?
You know what? He really did. A lot of his material was about he's newly engaged, so he talked a lot about his fiance, and he talked a lot about his kids and like their life all together. It was kind of all, I don't want to say PG, maybe PG-13. It wasn't like super raunchy. But what he did do that was really cool was when he had like a big projection screen behind him. And when he first got out there, he said, you know, I always love coming to Cleveland. I've filmed a couple of my stand-up specials here. It's always great crowds. I feel like Cleveland always has my back. So tonight I want all of Cleveland behind me. And he actually projected like a beautiful image of the Cleveland skyline behind him for most of the set.
That's pretty awesome.
And I don't know, maybe he does that in every city. I have no idea, but I'm telling myself that we're special, and no, he just did it for us. It was really cool.
Cleveland is the greatest crowd. Yeah, that whole like getting the cheap pop.
Yeah, I do. He did film a couple of his specials here, so maybe it's actually special to him. But he also, I was at the late show that night, like the second show, and LeBron was sitting front row. And at the end of his set, he kind of called LeBron out and thanked him for. He said something like, thank you to the king for letting me use his castle tonight. This is LeBron's home. Love the Cavs. Like, he did this whole little Cavs warm, fuzzy speech. And that was the loudest cheer he got all night. They showed LeBron on the screen for a minute. It was really cool.
Well, and he and LeBron have been friends for years, because I remember listening to Kevin Hart. Kevin Hart was the one who got LeBron to come down to the Comedy Cellar in New York the one night, and Jim Norton and all the different comedians got to meet LeBron and his different people. And I, you know, I was kind of mad at the time because LeBron was Miami LeBron, but neither here nor there.
That doesn't matter now.
Again, this is why we don't want to dig up 4-year-old tweets. Somebody dug up some of my tweets from like 10 minutes after the decision.
Mm-hmm.
And was like retweeting them 5 years later.
Stop like, it.
Okay, I'll own it. It's fine. It's fine. Yeah, you got it. I was pissed.
Right, as we all were.
So, all right. So last but not least, people have listened this far. Let's talk about you a little bit, just so that they can get to know you. What's your sports DNA? What makes you sports tick? For those who are going to be reading the stuff that you write on Waiting for Next Year.
Yeah. You know, I guess I have always been Indians first in my like Cleveland DNA. It's always been Indians first, then Cavs, then Browns. I was a kid in the 90s. I was like 11 when the 95 team happened. Don't do the math to how old I am now, but, that was such a fun time to be following the Indians, to be 10, 11 years old. And they had such an incredible run in the mid 90s. It just kind of, I fell in love with baseball. I fell in love with the Indians, and that kind of just opened the doors, I guess, for me to fall for all Cleveland sports.
And so is it just going to take a magical run? I mean, so you kind of missed out on any of the Browns' heyday in the mid to late 80s.
I did. Luckily for me.
Yeah, because in 1985 was the first Brown season I really kind of watched, and I was 6 years old. So never mind. You were too young. We'll just say you were too young to miss it. So by the time the Browns left, you were not into sports yet.
You know, I remember watching that last game, the last game before the Browns left for Baltimore. And I remember both of my parents tearing up about it. And I was a little bit too young to really get it, but I think understand how important the Browns were to them and how important the Browns were to Cleveland to see my parents so emotionally moved by the whole thing.
Yeah.
I remember watching it. Because I think the game was blacked out that day or something.
I think it was too.
I remember my dad watching it on this little tiny terrible TV with janky rabbit ears, just trying to get the game. And I remember seeing people rip the bleachers apart. And I will probably never forget that.
Yeah. All right. So then Cavs jumped up into second place. Was LeBron's first run kind of your formative Cavs years?
Yeah, it really was. I admittedly didn't get super into them until LeBron happened. And I just, when they're good, they're so fun to watch and to follow. This past year, the 2015 Cavs were just, I absolutely loved that team for all the personality and all the fun. Even when they were down and out, I feel like they were still a fun team to watch.
Yeah.
And I just love them.
So are you an NBA fan or are you just a Cavs fan?
You know, I'm probably more of just a Cavs fan. I try to pay attention to the rest of the NBA. I think the Western Conference, I know very little about, but I try to stay well-versed in what's going on in and around, just especially now, with free agency happening and all of this craziness, I find it all really interesting and I want to know what's going on. So try to stay as
well, especially now that you've joined Waiting for Next Year, you really have skin in the game in terms of, in terms of sports.
Yeah, I really do. And it's been awesome so far. I feel like you guys are all so knowledgeable. It's crazy. I'm just Jacob speaks a foreign language to me. It's crazy how smart and how knowledgeable.
I'm that guy. I've said this before. I don't remember stats. I don't remember what record the Browns had in a certain year. I just associate emotions with the team.
Right. So, exactly.
This is why I like rom-coms, to me, it's not about the nuts and bolts. It's about the fans and the stands and the feelings. And I know that's kind of hackney or whatever, but that's just the way I've always related to sports.
No, I totally agree. Totally agree. I'm a writer for a living, so I stay away from the numbers as much as possible.
Yeah. Well, and that's one of the things, especially with this NBA offseason, that Scott said a lot about too, because he fashions himself a storyteller and a writer, and if he gets down into the minutiae of the CBA. And he said this behind the scenes, but if he gets into the minutiae of the CBA, he feels like he's already lost the battle of creating content.
Right.
Which I kind of relate to. Either you've got to be so on top of that, all the technicalities. But even then, it's
it's overwhelming.
Yeah. And I used to have it memorized, and then they changed the whole thing. And it's why did I build in all that knowledge? So did you have any kind of a take on the this will be so old news. I can't believe I'm doing this. Why am I doing this? Did you have any sort of a take on the DeAndre Jordan thing and what he did? We were comparing it to Carlos Boozer earlier in the day.
Yeah, that whole thing was crazy. I feel bad for Mavs fans that got their hopes up, because we as Clevelanders know how that feels. And I don't think it would be very cool of us to laugh at their pain.
No.
I don't feel bad for Mark Cuban necessarily. I'm not a huge fan.
I'm a huge Mark Cuban fan, but I still don't feel that bad for him, because he's a big boy. He can take it.
Right, exactly. I guess, yeah.
That dude won 75 times over already, so,
right. Yeah, he's like he's fine. He'll survive. I thought everything with like Chris Broussard and then like the back and forth today was really interesting. I saw Mark Cuban said, you know, show me these tweets you have that say I'm driving around Houston and I'll donate $100,000 to a charity of your choice. Just like we thought last night was crazy and then it like kept going all today. I think it's so funny.
Well, and that's crazy too, because I do think sometimes these reporters are wrong, but Mark Cuban's taking it to a different level, saying he's basically saying Chris Broussard made it up.
Right.
Which is like a whole different level of accusation than what we're used to seeing.
Yeah, it's, you know, and it's, I feel like reporting via Twitter, the way that Chris Broussard was, when you just say sources, you're always just saying sources. It opens the door for someone to call you out and to question it. And did he ever respond to Mark Cuban's kind of challenge? I haven't seen.
Do you think we're someday going to look back at this phase of our lives in the reporting on Twitter and say, well, hey, why were we giving stuff away for free on a platform that we don't own?
Yeah, I think that we will.
God, it's such a weird point in time. It's hard to think that we won't look back on this and go, what were we doing?
Right. And it's everything moves so quickly that the margin of error is so great. You know, when you're trying to get news out there and you're scrambling and it's crazy.
Well, and at a certain point, the information comes out so quickly and it's expired so quickly, it might as well have not had any value to begin with.
You're exactly right. And I feel like, especially on Twitter, you know, the life of a tweet is so fleeting. If you don't put an ad buy behind that tweet or like pay to promote it, you know, how many eyes are ever going to see it? It's that wheel is constantly turning and your tweet, as soon as you send it, is getting pushed down by about a million other tweets. So
I'm really hoping that eventually the people who slow it down and actually pick out the important things will win in the end. And maybe that has more to do with my inability to be as immediate as I once was. But, you know, so it's like it's convenient for me to say that the winning strategy would be the one that I can actually partake in as opposed to the one that I can't. But I really think that we're in a quantity over quality phase right now, and I'm hoping that the quality over quantity will eventually win out, because and this is why I get into it over the tipping of draft picks 27 seconds before they're announced in the first round of the NFL or NBA draft. Like, I get that reporters do their jobs, and if their job means that they have that information ahead of time, like, I do understand that, but I'd also refuse to believe that 27 seconds was worth it, or like it shows a value that's worthwhile.
Yeah, I agree. And it was, you know, following the NBA draft and Woj like scooping every single thing that happened, he was like, what's the value in that? He wasn't driving his readers anywhere. He wasn't, you know, he was just putting it out there, and then things were getting retweeted like crazy. And yeah, your reach and your frequency, if you're looking at like measuring that, are going to spike, but what's the value behind that? What is that really doing for you or doing for any of your readers?
I always likened it to the show off guitarist who could like shred, but like nobody cares. Write a song that I want to listen to 3.5 minutes, you know?
Right.
And that's one of the things that, I first of all, I don't subscribe to the group of people that slam Brian Windhorst all the time, but I will say that I think he used to be far more of a writer and a columnist and less of like the reporter. And I think in his role at ESPN, we get far less of the writer journalist Brian Windhorst and more of the reporter tweeter talking head Brian Windhorst. And that's not a slam on him. That's I just miss the more writerish. Like, I always projected him to be a Terry Pluto someday, not a Chris Broussard, and he's not full Chris Broussard. He's still a good writer and he writes a lot more, but a little too much reporter. I prefer long form Brian.
Yeah, that's such a good point. That's, you know, it's two totally different styles and it's two totally different, like, mediums, I guess. That storytelling voice doesn't always have a place in, like, the rapid-fire nature of Twitter, and it's too bad. But I think that's a really good point.
Well, this has been fun. I always know it's been a fun podcast when I look up and 35 minutes have gone by without even thinking about it.
Oh, my gosh.
And we're no longer talking about Amy Schumer.
I feel like we stopped talking about Amy Schumer a long time ago.
Yeah, pretty much.
But that's okay.
Thank you so much, Jessica Forrester. Where can people find you on Twitter? Because, you of course, you had to go by nickname Twitter account. So.
You can find me on Twitter at Jessa Forrester, Forrester.
And, of course, you can see her work on Waiting for Next Year. Congratulations for being the first full-time female writer at Waiting for Next Year. And I hope it's a pleasant experience. We like having you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm loving being here.
All right, and we'll do more on the podcast as well.
Sounds good.
All right, and thanks very much for listening. Make sure you leave some comments. Let us know what you thought of the Amy Schumer movie. You will probably be seeing it tonight or tomorrow night by the time this is released. And we want to know, you know, what your reaction is to it, what your reaction is to LeBron and his big role as Bill Hader's best friend in the movie. So listen to the podcast, watch the movie, tell a friend, all that good stuff. And until next time, it's been the WaitingForNextYear.com podcast. Waiting for Next Year.
I'm a grown-up.
Me too.
Yep, me too. But you know, these days, being a grown-up can really suck.
Luckily, we're grown-ups who grew up in the coolest generation.
We had video arcades.
And also some of the best TV and movies ever made.
We lived the origin of awesome consumer electronics. The list goes on and on.
Yep, Generation X.
Exactly.
And we're Gen X Grown-Up.
Every week, the Gen X Grown-Up podcast explores media, tech, toys, games, and more from both yesterday and today.
Through the eyes of Generation Xers who absolutely love that stuff. You can find us on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts.
Or find us on our website, GenXGrownUp.com. All right, you think that was good enough?
I hope so, man. I'm tired.
Who listens to a promo on a podcast and then goes and listens to a different podcast?
Right. I've never done it. No, right.